Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, the 28th of April, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings, 9 to 10. We re-air 7 to 8. Lineup for today, very busy show. We have a newsmaker interview with Gary Hayes, head of the RTA and the Pima Association of Governments. There is a lot to talk about with Mr. Hayes. Then we'll talk about the Stamp Out Hunger food drive that's coming in May. The bottom of the hour, Tucson City Councilwoman Karen Ulick joins us. We'll close out the program with a conversation with a Harvard professor who has some eye-opening information about undocumented parents and their young citizen children. That's the Buckmaster Show today, and we're going to get right into it with Gary Hayes next month. May marks the five-year anniversary of Pima County voters approving a 20-year regional transportation plan. Gary Hayes is not only the head executive director of RTA, he has another hat. He's the executive director of the Pima Association of Governments. Mr. Hayes, good to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Get ready to rock and roll. Okay. We have lots to talk about. Let's begin with the five-year anniversary of the passage of the RTA plan. Where are we at this point with this plan?
As you know, the plan is based on 4 or 5 year segments, and we're coming to the end on May 16th is the actual precise day of the anniversary of the vote that was held May 16th, 2006. We committed the voters to, for example, to do 11 major roadway projects, to have them under construction or completed during the first 5 years. We've got 10. The 11th is the Colb Road extension. We're working diligently with the city to get that under construction this year.
The Colb Road extension will go forward despite some opposition.
We feel we have a strong commitment that we have to fulfill to the voters. That was one of the key projects that was clearly defined in the plan, clearly defined as part of the first five-year quarter, and we're committed to doing that.
What's the problem there? Because of the proximity to the Udall Park?
That's the problem. Some of the townhouse owners are very concerned, not just in terms of what the direct impact is going to be, but it changes their environment. I think some of the folks there are senior citizens that liked access to the park. We're going to be attentive to that. We're going to make sure that that's addressed. But they are opposed to it, but we have a commitment to the overall regional voters that we're going to fulfill.
And I know you want to invite everyone to come out on Monday, May 16th, 5 to 6. This should be a fun affair at the Tucson Convention Center, a little bit of a celebration of RTA's 5th anniversary.
It is. It's explaining to the citizenry everything we've accomplished, how we fulfilled our commitments, and more importantly, where we're going to go the next 5 years and beyond. And it's important to note the next 5 years we'll have construction all over the region. And that was how the plan was originally envisioned.
Let's talk a little bit about relationship with the city. It has been rocky at times. How would you characterize it right now, the RTA-city relationship?
I would say it's quite good. The biggest project we work on jointly is the modern streetcar. That is going along as well as it possibly could go. I just met with the federal funding partners in San Francisco. They're very positive about where things are. We have a very good working relationship with the city on that project. All of the roadway projects, I think the city transportation department is taking the lead, whether it's Grant Road or Houghton or any of the other projects, and I think they've done a very good job with that.
Talk a little bit about the RTA and the relationship with the selling of the bonds for completing the first phase and now moving into the second phase.
Right. We have authorization from the RTA board to go to the bond market. I was in San Francisco 2 weeks ago meeting with rating agencies. We just found out last night we've got a AA+ rating from Moody's, which is very good. The interest rates are as competitive as they've ever been. What we're seeing on bidding prices, they're as low as they've ever been, so we want to take advantage of that. We'd like to put $150 million in the street in the next 15 months. You can imagine what that does to job creation, sustaining jobs and everything else. So we're really committed to that.
But the bond market looks favorable at this point.
Very favorable.
And the economy starting to come back.
It is, but we're also very fortunate that we have a dedicated funding source. And the sales tax clearly puts us in a good position to deal with revenue bonds because we have that source to pay debt service.
The Grant Road overhaul, certainly that's a huge piece, isn't it?
Right. It's one of the key projects I mentioned during the second 5 years. We expect the Grant Oracle intersection to go to bid this year and be under construction. That's the first project. We'll see other projects during the next 5 years and for the balance of the 20 years on Grant Road.
Is there a marquee project for your second five-year piece.
We have a whole series of projects, and I'd just like to mention some of the ones that go bidding soon and what we're dealing with bonding. The Cold Road extension you mentioned, McGee Road, La Cañada, La Cholla, Grant, Houghton, Downtown Links, Keno and 22nd. All of these are phases that we're going through. Some of them began construction during the first 5 years. Some of them continue out, like I said, for the balance of the 20. So those are the roadway projects. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the importance of our transit investments. SunTran and SunVan have been great partners. Oral Valley, as you know, has decided not to continue Coyote Run. We're stepping in, filling the breach with our Sun Shuttle program. We're talking to the three paratransit providers, the county, Oral Valley, and the city about combining those services after we've already taken over the handicar paratransit from the county. We expect to doing similar work with the Oral Valley, and we'll be having conversations with the city on how that moves forward.
And I think more people are going to be looking to the bus, certainly, in transit now when you've got gas. Some are saying it could be $6 a gallon by Labor Day or 4th of July.
We see some interesting statistics. For example, we run Sun Express from a number of outlying areas. The one that I'm familiar with is on Oldville Road. The second route that comes into downtown is standing room only. And that's a sign that we really need to be attentive to what the gas price is. Once it hits $4, you're going to really see some ridership increases.
It's 13 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Gary Hayes is with us, head of the RTA and the Pima Association of Governments. Before we move over to the Pima Association of Governments side of things, we're talking about RTA and buses. People have seen some of those big ads on the buses. Right. Are those perhaps setting maybe the wrong tone?
Well, we're concerned about, you've got a 240-250 bus fleet. The city has a current policy. They may have actually updated it to allow for the wrapping of 15 buses for advertising. We're concerned whether the advertising dollar is there. We don't want to change the image and the message, but we have to be sensitive to what their financial condition is. Also, we have an agreement from the city that once the advertising term is over, the original image of that silver, blue, and white cool image that we've tried to convey throughout the region, not just SunTran and SunVan, but all the other elements, Sun Shuttle, Sun Express, everything else has that same motif. And we want to make sure we continue that message. So we're having conversations with the city about that.
Now to switch over, Gary Hayes as Executive Director of the Pima Association of Governments. The governor has signed a bill that, in effect, gives the town of Marana control of the Pima County sewage plant. How is the Pima Association of Governments involved in this?
We have a responsibility designated by the governor and also by the federal EPA to conduct what's called a 208 planning process and create a regional wastewater plan. The town of Marana has requested an amendment to that plan to allow them to be the designated management agency. The county has resisted that. Today we have a meeting where that's going to be discussed, that formal application. This is a very contentious issue, and we're trying to create somehow a win-win situation for all the parties, but it's a very complex, difficult issue to get through.
It is a difficult issue because, Let's face it, Pima Association of Governments includes the town of Marana.
Right.
It includes Pima County.
Right.
So you've got the
Oral Valley, Suarita.
Some competing interests, to say the least.
Yeah, but that is the nature of these regional organizations, that you try and get a win-win so everybody benefits.
Okay. Air quality. We've heard the news now that Phoenix air quality, really bad news.
Yeah.
Tucson, pretty good news.
Yeah.
Right up there with Santa Fe, New Mexico. And
I think we've done some interesting things. We're kind of a green community. If you look at the efforts that the community has made, our Clean Cities program, which is an alternative fuels program, has made great strides with fleets in terms of alternative energy, and that's what drives a lot of the air quality issues and vehicles. SunTran and SunVan have made great strides in improving that. The only concern we have is ozone. If you look at the report, it gets a C. We're concerned about the standards that the federal government is going to apply to ozone. If we have to do sort of additional things beyond what we're doing, it's going to really mean the increase in price of gas, and it's going well beyond the $4 mark. So we're concerned about how that's going to impact economic development and business opportunities.
But generally, when you look outside on any given day, our air quality
we don't see
pretty,
the brown cloud.
No, we don't see
the brown right. That's exactly right.
So that's the good news piece of that. Imagine Greater Tucson, and we've had Eileen Fagan, had her on the TV show, and we've had her here on the radio show a couple of times. What is the Imagine Greater Tucson relationship to the Pima Association of Governments?
We're a very active participant in that. Matter of fact, we're the primary funder of that initiative. We currently have a contract for $500,000. It's important that your listeners understand these are monies that come out of very dedicated funding pots. They're not kind of monies that you can go out and fix potholes and do that sort of thing. It's dedicated, this kind of a visioning exercise, and it's federal money. And this is what we used in Salt Lake City and Portland and other communities that have engaged in this. Very successful program. First event they had was on the 7th of April at the Marriott University. Over 400 people thinking very positively. They have a number of workshops coming up on the 18th, 19th, and 25th of May. If you look at our website, www.pagnet.org, you'd get some details on that.
But their overall goal is, I guess, just what, like they say, a greater looking at a better community.
Yeah,
for
some of the leaders of this program talk about they want to develop an RTA on steroids, which I thought is sort of an interesting way to view it, and beyond transportation. And we've got a great community. We got to think positive about it. We got to talk about regional solutions about how we move forward.
Are people generally on the RTA? Pretty much everybody is on the same page on this thing.
The RTA board is very positive about where we're going and kinds of things we're doing. As you know, the RTA board is also the PAG Regional Council. I think the general impression is that we're moving in the right direction. On the RTA side, we're making good investments in the community. I think the community is going to see a lot more in the second 5 years, because a lot of the original work that we did in the first couple of years was really planning and design work. And now you're going to actually see construction. We're going to get complaints. There's going to be so much construction going on.
Really?
Yeah.
And streetcar, we kind of touched on it earlier. We've got about a minute left for you to talk about how important that is.
Streetcar is critical. It's critical in terms of the future of downtown. I often say to Mayor Walk Up, downtown is pregnant with opportunities, and the streetcar is really going to bring them to full reality. We expect that's going to be on time, on budget. It'll be operational by the fall of October or October of 2013. There'll be some trial runs well before that, so it's really working well.
Okay, so a couple of things I want to remind our listeners about that Gary Hayes would like to invite the public to the Monday, May 16th event. That's 5 to 6 in the afternoon. Should be a fun event at the Tucson Convention Center. Probably give an overview of what's gone on the first 5 years and looking ahead to the remaining 15, perhaps, of this 20-year program. And the Imagine Greater Tucson, do you have that date again?
18th, 19th, and 25th of May at different sites around town. Go to our website. Site and you'll be able to figure that one out.
Okay, Gary Hayes from RTA and the Pima Association of Governments. We will see you down the road.
We will.
Thanks a lot, Gary Hayes.
Thank you.
19 minutes now past the hour. We'll talk about stamping out hunger. All the letter carriers in the community getting together with the community food bank to stamp out hunger. We'll be back.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Imagine a jewelry store that is both sophisticated and organic, where Tucson's rich cultural heritage mingles with contemporary design. We invite you to Veer Jewelers, where our commitment to customer service is surpassed only by our reputation for creating inspired custom jewelry that is as unique as our customers. At Veer Jewelers, you are warmly welcomed, whether you are bringing in an heirloom for repair or design, replacing a watch battery, or shopping for a special gift. Visit our unique showroom, centrally located on Campbell, just north of Grant, or visit our website at veerjewelers.com. Veer Jewelers, Tucson's trusted jeweler for more than 25 years.
Minutes now past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. For the 19th consecutive year, almost two decades now, the National Association of Letter Carriers and the Community Food Bank in Tucson will be teaming up to stamp out hunger, the biggest food drive effort of the year, really, for the food bank. Bill Carnegie is the CEO at the food bank. Mr. Carnegie is joined in studio by Dan Turrentine of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Bill.
Let's begin with you, Dan. How important is this to you and your colleagues who deliver the mail to us every day?
This is very important. It's our chance to give back to the community anything that we can.
Do people need to remember anything specifically? How is this going to work?
Well, we'll be passing bags out to the mailboxes. And this year, unfortunately, we do have a little bit of a shortage, so everybody may not get the bags. But all we ask is that they leave a canned food in their mailbox, hanging from their mailbox, by their mailbox. We'll pick it up and get it to the food bank.
Bill Carnegie, how important is this? And I forgot to mention in my intro, this is going to be Saturday, May
14th.
And I did not mention that in my intro. I did say it's the 19th consecutive year. So in your overall scheme of things, in your food drives throughout the year, where does this put one place?
This is, Bill, it's certainly the number one food drive that we have. As you can imagine, need is higher this year than any of the 19 previous years that we've done this food drive. Food Bank right now is helping about 225,000 people every month all across Southern Arizona. So it's really important that people look in their cupboards and, you know, or go to the store and pick up a couple extra things and put those out for the letter carriers to pick up on Saturday, May 14th. And if they can have it out by 9 o'clock in the morning, it'll be sure to get to where it needs to go.
Bill Carnegie, is there a particular need for some items that you folks, perhaps when they're going through the cupboard, I think they need that. But are you just saying you need it all?
Well, certainly we need it all. You know, we like to look for higher protein items, and there's always a shortage of cereal. So, but it's really what anyone uses in their own home, we can use, because everything that we raise in this food drive does go to local families in need. So you're really going to be helping your neighbors by participating.
And Dan, when the letter carriers get together, this is an important issue for them, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Nationally, as Bill said, this is the largest food drive, one-day food drive in the nation, and we're behind it 100%. This is strictly voluntary on the letter carriers part.
But most of them are on board.
Yes. Yes, and if we find out that there isn't someone, we'll have a volunteer to take care of their
for that place. Particular Saturday, May the 14th. I want to congratulate the Community Food Bank and Bill Carnegie. Some news came out recently that the food bank is a pretty darn good place to work. In fact, of 1.5 million nonprofit organizations across the country, the Community Food Bank here in Tucson is considered the third best place to work and number one in Arizona. So what makes this such a friendly place? If you're a worker there at the food bank, are you going to get a smile at least?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're going to be greeted. You're going to get a smile. I think it's because of the people that we have there. The atmosphere is just one of warmth and compassion for those that we help. We're very mission-driven, very strong in our values and understanding how important we are to the community. And people, they appreciate that and they thrive in that environment. So I'm very proud to be able to work there.
Now, can anyone shop at your community food bank grocery store? There's always sort of a misconception about who's invited to come by the food bank.
Well, I have some sad news for
you,
Bill.
Okay, tell me.
Because a few months ago, we actually closed that store.
Oh, I loved that store.
I know. It was it was a problem for us in marketing it because people thought only low-income people could go there. So our sales have just been, they declined over the years where we just looked at the expense of operating it and decided that we would do better to put that money into food and really help people in need. So I'm sorry to say, but the store is gone.
All right. Well, let's get back to the Stamp Out Hunger Saturday, the 14th. And is there a particular time that the letter carriers, they're going to be on their regular route, correct?
That's correct. And as Bill said, it's best if you get the food in out by the mailbox by 9 o'clock in the morning. Some carriers hit the street a little bit earlier than others, but 9 o'clock would be a safe time to have it out.
And perishables, that is a problem, correct?
Yeah, we don't really want perishables, so keep your chicken in the refrigerator or pack a hot dog, something like that. Though we could use them, we don't really want them to sit out in the sun all day. Also, if you could avoid donating glass. We have a lot of volunteers that are handling all the products during the day, sorting it, and their glass items always seem to get broken. And we really don't want anyone injured.
How much do you measure this, Bill Carnegie, in terms of tonnage that you bring in, or how does that work?
We actually do it by pounds. Last year, in 8 hours.
Maybe I'm being too optimistic with tons.
No,
right?
Tons, okay. Tons okay. Is a good number. Tons. It's just okay. That the pounds is a bigger number, but thanks to the letter carriers, last year we brought in over 340,000 pounds of food.
Wow.
So it's, and every bit of it went to local families in need. So, I can't thank the letter carriers enough for what they do to help hungry people here in Southern Arizona.
Okay, we're coming up on a hard break, but I do want to remind everyone that is Saturday the 14th. This is a great program, 19th consecutive year of Stamp Out Hunger, brought to you by the Food Bank and the National Association of Letter Carriers. Gentlemen, have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Bill, thank you so much, and we really want to thank your listeners for everything that they do for us.
Thanks a lot. We'll see you down the road. Bye-bye.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. The death toll is adding up in the South. More than 200 people were killed in what may have been the worst tornado outbreak in U.S. history. You may have seen the video of a tornado hitting Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Christopher English tells us what it was like to shoot that video.
I could feel the pressure change, and of course, you know, my heart was racing.
Rich Thompson of the Storm Prediction Center says there were a number of factors that made these storms so bad.
We end up with the moisture, the instability, and the strong winds associated with the storm systems in the same place for back-to-back days, and that's when bad things happen.
In some places, entire neighborhoods were leveled. Witnesses say they heard a gigantic boom come from a cafe in Morocco. The explosion killed at least 14 people. Most of them were tourists. Investigators say it appears to be a terrorist attack. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Hey there, how's it going? My name's Eric, and I work at Lowe's. Come to Lowe's and choose 18-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more when you use your Lowe's consumer credit card. And right now, you can take 15% off Energy Star appliances or 10% off other major appliances priced $397 or more. So head to Lowe's today for our special financing and save big on appliances. Lowe's, let's build something together. Offers valid through 5/2/11. Cannot be combined with 5% off everyday credit offer. Some restrictions apply. Valid in U.S. only.
People come to Ruth's Chris for more than just a great steak. They come to let off some steam. Take Rob, Joe, and Shelley. When they get wrapped up in a week-long assignment at work, they head on over to Ruth's Chris for a much-needed break over some sizzling steak served to perfection. It's a chance for them to loosen up, have a few laughs, and talk about anything. Anything but work, that is. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse. Serving more than just sizzling steaks.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
With 30 projects under construction, including work at La Cañada Drive and the First Avenue bus pullouts, the Regional Transportation Authority is delivering our promise to you already. RTA has completed 174 projects, including 5 major roadways, and launched transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle. Your tax dollars are creating jobs and making travel around our region faster and safer. Please be careful of workers in those areas and obey all traffic signs. The RTA, delivering our promise to you.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza. Topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinker Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinker Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tanca Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tanca Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It is 36 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, and Karen Ulick, Tucson City Councilwoman, joins us now. Councilwoman, good to see you.
Nice to see you, Bill. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the program. Let's begin with the city's financial situation. Does it look a little better than it did 12 months ago when you were talking about looking ahead for the next 12-month budget plan?
Well, you know, it's clear that we are beginning to see signs of an economic recovery. That is very good news. The housing market may be stabilizing. Our budget challenges continue, however. We really have a budget in front of us for the coming fiscal year that cuts costs even further, and that achieves a balanced budget, but that has not been an easy task.
The city's been working to try to close some of that budget gap. There's been a lot of red ink on the table. Where are we right now in that process?
We just had the manager's final proposed budget, which is actually based upon a framework that mayor and council provided, which essentially says the community can't handle more taxes right now. Everybody is suffering quite a bit, and that we need to make sure that we not only balance this year's budget, but take the long view. We have to start looking 5 years out, and so we do our very best, and I think he did a good job of following the direction of mayor and council.
The operating budget is less than 1% lower than last year, while the general fund is about 4.5% lower. By contrast, the construction budget is 5% higher. Why more on the construction side?
Well, of course, we have other sources of funds, non-general fund revenues, the RTA, the regional transportation funds, federal funds that come into the city. So most of our capital projects are funded through those other sources. And we do have, fortunately for the job scene, quite a bit of public activity in infrastructure projects funded through those sources.
And we just had Gary Hayes on our program this morning, and I asked him about the relationship with the city, and he says that's improving.
Yeah,
that the folks are getting closer to being on the same page and looking a little better in that area. Would you agree?
Well, you know, I think that there have been real challenges, and it's this region's first foray into several layers of governance, and it has been quite a challenge. So I'm very hopeful that that we can stay, you know, that we keep channels of communication open and identify the common ground that we can move forward on. And so I agree with Gary that if we can really focus on that common ground, we'll do well.
You know, with gas prices going, we talked to Gary about this. Gas prices, it seems like $4 a gallon is kind of a break point when people say, you know, I really do need to look at riding the bus here because this is just an economic hardship. And, of course, bus fares are going up, but I guess ridership has been increasing as the price of gas goes up.
Absolutely. And more people are recognizing SunTran as a viable option to get to and from work or to get around the community. And so the key and the reason that I fought so hard against any service cuts is you can't grow your customer base if the quality of the product is diminished. And so we're sustaining high-quality service, and we will have increasing ridership, and that obviously helps to fiscally keep the system sound.
Do you think the streetcar project will bring new business along the route?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is no doubt about it. And quite frankly, even bus routes support business development. Anywhere there's a bus stop, that affects business. And so transit routes are proven to be excellent starters for business.
You know, the U of A coming downtown, putting a lot of students into the downtown area, many say that this is the big deal that is really going to put downtown back on its feet.
It's a real turning point, and obviously it was a vision that's been held by the city for some time, and that's why the streetcar route is as it is. And so it's really exciting to see that vision come true. It'll energize the downtown. It'll also take pressure off neighborhoods that have been encroached by mini dorms and other things that really don't serve students or the residents of Tucson well.
The city decided that there will be all male voting for the next election, but now there are conflicting signs coming out of Phoenix whether or not that's actually going to happen. You were quoted in the paper in the Arizona Daily Star as saying that the frustration level with the state of Arizona is growing.
Well, sure. I mean, just as I know that my constituents do not want me to try and run the local school board or meddle in the affairs of Pima County, people want their elected representatives to focus on their own jobs. Otherwise, we're going to have a real mess on our hands. And so it's been very frustrating. I've invited any legislator who would choose, move on into Ward 3 and run against me if you want to do my job. But otherwise, you don't represent the same constituents that I do, so you should not be trying to make the decisions on behalf of my constituents. And it has been frustrating. Regardless, we are moving forward in the direction we think is best. Can I just say a couple more things about vote by mail?
Please.
I was persuaded by a number of factors brought to my attention. The security for vote by mail is actually higher than it is for mail for voting at the polls. Part of that is because it's a serious federal offense to perpetrate mail fraud. So any fraud that occurs, voter fraud, is layered with additional ramifications. The postal system has an inspector general who supervises and handles those kinds of prosecutions. Secondly, we can audit by precinct. Right now, we can only audit by voter area, so the degree to which we can audit our elections and ensure accountability is enhanced. The Pima County recorder, city clerk, and I was very persuaded by the former president of the League of Women Voters, all saying that they really felt this was the appropriate direction. Having said that, there will be a polling location in each ward, and I think a lot of people are going to walk their ballots in on Election Day. And I may be one of those. I understand that tradition.
Yes.
And expect to see a lot of people on Election Day still dropping their ballots at the poll.
So if the governor signs this bill that would outlaw Tucson's planned vote by mail, you would imagine the city would fight that.
Well, what I asked the city attorney is, can we just consolidate this? We're already in court with the state on their attempt to meddle with city elections. Thankfully, the city's position has been upheld.
It was upheld, yes.
And so can we just say, oh, and by the way, if they try and meddle with our elections in this third way, fourth, fifth, or sixth way, can we just get a ruling from you that that's unconstitutional? And ultimately, we're going to prevail. It's just such a waste of taxpayer dollars.
They really have put Tucson in the spotlight up in Phoenix. Quickly, we've got about a minute and a half to go. We had Herb Stratford on the Buckmaster Show yesterday. Of course, he's the founding executive director of the Fox Tucson Theater. He had some interesting thoughts about perhaps privatizing the Fox and the Tucson Convention Center's resources, the Leo Rich Theater and Music Hall. Worth talking about?
I think, I don't know whether private, public, or some kind of partnership. I do think it makes a lot of sense to have a look at an entertainment district or a performance complex. And quite frankly, I think the Tucson Convention Center might be better termed the Tucson Performing Arts Center, because that's really what that venue offers. A convention center is a part of it, but the truth is there's incredible theater, symphony, and performing arts occurring at the convention center and in the downtown. So his idea of rebranding and restructuring, I think, is worth a look.
Why don't we rebrand it right now? I like that idea. Tucson Performing Arts Center. It does make sense because it is more than a convention center.
Exactly, exactly.
I've got a few seconds left. Generally, downtown, I keep hearing new restaurants opening. I mean, there's energy now.
Yeah, there is. And, I think there has been a tough period where people couldn't see the seeds springing out of the ground. And now much of the vision and the efforts over the last 5 or 6 years are coming to fruition. And we could say anything we wanted about how this day would come, but I think people wanted to see the proof in the pudding, and it's happening now. It's an exciting place to be, so come on downtown and check it out. It's a new place.
Karen Ulick, always a pleasure. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Bill.
Have a great day. Coming up now on 46 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Tucson's Regional Transportation Authority uses your tax dollars to create jobs and make local travel faster and safer. Transit services like Sun Express and Sun Shuttle and the completion of 5 major roadways are examples of how RTA is delivering on our promises to you. With 174 projects completed and 30 under construction, such as the First Avenue bus pullouts and La Cañada Drive, RTA wants to remind you to be careful of road workers and to obey all traffic signs. RTA, delivering our promises to you.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson community. Our thrift shop donations and sales provide more than half of needed funding, which goes to programs like Operation School Bell. Since its inception, Operation School Bell has provided clothing and school supplies for more than 38,000 children. But we need your help. Donate an item or a financial gift. Shop our thrift store or volunteer. For more information on how you can make a difference, visit AssistanceLeagueTucson.org.
Forty-eight minutes now past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. More than 4 million children born in the United States have undocumented immigrant parents. This Friday, the University of Arizona Francis McClellan Institute for Family Studies and Human Development will present a special session with Dr. Hiro Yoshikawa, who has written extensively and studied about the lives of undocumented immigrant families with children. In his latest book, Immigrants Raising Citizens, Undocumented Parents and Their Young Children, Dr. Yoshikawa challenges the conventional wisdom about undocumented immigrants. He's a professor of education with Harvard University's Graduate School of Education and a developmental and community psychologist. His presentation will be Friday from 2 to 3:30 in the afternoon at the Norton School of Family and Consumer Sciences, at the University of Arizona's McClellan Park, room 105. We talked with Dr. Yoshikawa on the Buckmaster Show a few minutes before we went on this morning at 9 a.m. Professor Yoshikawa, thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show today.
I'm very happy to be here.
Tell me about this latest book that you have, Immigrants Raising Citizens, Undocumented Parents and Their Young Children. How did this book come about, Professor?
Well, this book is, I think, the first book on this topic of undocumented parents and their young children's development. It came out of a large study of immigrant families and their newborns, who we recruited literally on the day they were born in public hospitals in New York City. And we've been following them for several years. So a lot of, very intensive research and data collection. The study itself was more broadly about culture and contexts and children's development. But from, in particular, the stories that the families told us, the theme of documentation status became kind of a powerful and unexpected story. So the study was of Chinese, Mexican, and Dominican families in New York City and their children. The book concerns the first 3 years of these children's lives.
And this book, in effect, challenges, does it not, the conventional wisdom about undocumented immigrants?
Yes, I would say, in contrast to some of the images of them, our experience, really getting to know these families, was how dedicated they were as parents in raising their young children. Undocumented parents were just as likely as documented parents to be reading books with their children, telling stories, being engaged and dedicated to their early learning. But these children's early cognitive skills, and particularly their language development, fell behind those of kids from documented groups because they, despite being citizen children, were not able to access programs that are really good for their development, like center-based child care. The parents living under the radar and in the shadows in fear, essentially, did not enroll their children in learning opportunities, and they often did not know about things, community resources, even like public libraries, that are good for children's development.
You know, in many ways, Professor, those that know the American immigration story and how we all come from basically somewhere else on this globe to the United States, this seems to fit in with that parents perhaps coming here want a better life for their children. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And just so I'm clear, all of the parents in this study were living and working in New York for years prior to giving birth to their children. So these are families that are here for the long haul. Their citizen children are here for the rest of their lives. There are 4.5 million citizen children with at least one undocumented parent in the United States. And as our economy rapidly ages, the question is, should we pay attention to the learning potential, the early skills of these children, their later school success, and ultimately their productivity as citizens?
Professor Yoshikawa, I wonder about language. Is it holding some of these kids back that perhaps they speak at home the native language while then they go to school and, of course, they speak English? Is that an issue?
Well, the most recent research shows that bilingualism in early childhood is actually associated with some benefits for children's cognitive development. And this has to do with the flexibility of learning two different languages, how that is actually literally good for brain development. So that's some of the newer research around that issue. So it's not necessarily something that holds children back.
You'll be speaking here in Tucson, actually tomorrow, Friday, from 2 to 3:30 in the afternoon at the John and Doris Norton School Family and Consumer Sciences at McClellan Park, room 105 at the University of Arizona. A reception will follow in the lobby, and this is a free event. What will your message be to the folks here in Tucson?
I'm looking forward to learning more about the context of these families in Tucson, since our study was conducted in New York. I do want to communicate the message that these parents, again, were extraordinarily dedicated to their children. Despite having jobs that were often 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, and working below the minimum wage, between a third and 40% of our parents were actually working below the minimum wage at illegally low wages. So despite these difficulties and very high work hours, when they were involved with their parent, with their children, they were maximizing their time with them. So that, I think, will be one of the central messages.
And the constant threat of discovery and deportation and the stressful work and financial conditions at these families that you profile in the New York area, I think that certainly will resonate and translate here in southern Arizona. I think many people can identify that that particular situation.
Yes, and the fact that these stresses do have consequences for children's development as early as at 24 months of age, I think, is something to be concerned about. Early childhood is a particularly important time for brain development, and the foundations of brain architecture are being laid down, and if those foundations aren't set, kids can be set on trajectories which bring about later difficulties in school, higher rates of school dropout, those kinds of things. So again, as taking the a view of an economy where we need to be maximizing the potential of all the citizen kids in the United States, I think this is something we should be concerned about.
And the citizen kids really don't get much attention. It is all about, it seems like in the media, the millions of undocumented parents. Isn't that true?
That's right. And of course, there has been attention also to undocumented children, of whom there are 1 million in the United States. But there are somewhere over 4 million citizen children of the of undocumented parents.
We've got about 1 minute left. What would you like the readers to take away from immigrants raising citizens, undocumented parents, and their young children? And I suppose this book is available at all the usual locations, Amazon, et cetera?
Yes. So this is a population, I think, that we don't understand very much about their daily lives and how their children develop. So I'm hopeful that this book will provide new perspectives on the experiences of these families from the viewpoint of young children in the first years of life.
Professor Yoshikawa, thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show today.
Thank you very much.
And again, that presentation will take place on Friday, that's tomorrow, from 2 to 3:30 in the afternoon at the John and Doris Norton School, Family and Consumer Sciences, McClellan Park at the University of Arizona. Everyone is invited. Thank you very much, Professor.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Got about a minute to go here on the Buckmaster Show. I want to invite everyone to look at buckmastershow.com. We have some important news there about the future of our program and the big change that will be happening on June the 1st. So we ask that you check out buckmastershow.com. Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers & Rieger is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show, we'll have our Friday Focus interview. Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry will be our guest. Lots to talk about with Mr. Huckleberry, including what's going to happen over the town of Marana and Pima County going at it over the Pima County sewage treatment plant in Marana. That's going to wrap it up here for the Buckmaster Show. Remember also tomorrow our Friday Radio Roundtable and Matt Russell with the Weekend Watch. I am Bill Buckmaster. Have a great day.